RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting episode of Green Justice and Arrow Podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
There we go. I'm Josh. Sorry, I had to pick my jaw up off of the floor.
Really, it was still on the floor after 3 days now?
I've been dragging it around. I got rug burn. There's a little grass stain in there. I was outside getting the mail, but wow.
Yeah, wow. Wow is an understatement. An understatement for the undertaking. So, well, you've discovered
it was an undertaking statement.
Yes. Well, you've discovered a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. But this week, Josh and I are going to cover the season finale for season one, episode number 23, Sacrifice. Can you believe, first off, before I get to any more details about the show, that it has been an entire season? 23 episodes, man.
It doesn't, man, it went by fast. It didn't feel like that.
They came back from Christmas break, and even though there were a couple small gaps in the series, this thing is just has been rolling on since Christmas. It's awesome. I am so pumped. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what I think they want to do at the season finale is go off on a really high beat. Should they never have been picked up for a second season, this would have been an awesome series finale as well. I think it was a great wrap up to the first season. And done in such a way that it is satisfying, allows you to enjoy your summer and not fret too much about what's coming next year, because pretty much anything could happen next year at this point, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the, a couple signs of a good TV show is one, that it goes by fast when you get to the end of the season. You know, you're shocked that it's already over. And two, when it is over, you can't wait for it to start again, and you've got to wait the entire summer.
Yeah.
So, and that's just how this feels. So, I'm crazy.
Yeah. Well, so this episode, again, called Sacrifice, it aired originally on May 15th, 2013. And in this episode, the undertaking is here. Malcolm Merlyn starts with Oliver chained up as he reveals his plans. And then Oliver escapes, and he employs Diggle and Felicity and Detective Lance to try to stop the UNIDAC machine, Markov device, also as it's known, from leveling the glades. Tommy finds out the truth. Moira reveals about the all she knows about the undertaking to the world, and Thea rushes to save Roy. And if that's not enough exclamation marks for you, there's an epic battle among the two archers amidst the chaos, rioting, looting, earthquakes, and island flashbacks involving missiles, explosions, arrows, and a very angry Fires. Yeah, he's all Fires. And it was all this and more in the season finale of Arrow. I mean, it was just, it was jam-packed.
Yeah.
It is exactly what I enjoy about season finales. In the best way, because it doesn't leave you with a strong cliffhanger like, you know, the main character about to be shot or blown up or something, and then you have to wait, you know, 4 or 5, 6 months until that gets resolved. There are questions that loom, but it seems like the first season now is sort of a self-contained unit, and each season appears to be kind of like a mini series in a comic book, I guess. This is a story, and next season, my opinion is that we'll get another chapter. We will move on. The producers talk about how they actually try to take the real time that happens between episodes as the time that is actually occurring for the characters between episodes. So if there's a 2-week break, it'll have been 2 weeks for the characters as well. So, you know, there's obviously,
well, that explains how Oliver healed up after Christmas, after that big long break.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's I think there have been a couple of times when characters have referenced something, you know, happening last week. And they actually mean last week in their time, but it's also the previous episode in our time, which is kind of cool. So that means that, you know, they've got 4 or 5 months now to kind of get the city back together, or, you know, start rebuilding or whatever it is that needs to happen here. So that's going to be a really cool, you know, season premiere next year, because I just don't know where we're going to go. Sometimes with season finales, you know exactly where it's going to go, at least for the beginning of the season. And on this one, you know, it's kind of all up in the air. So,
yeah, and I think, like you said, it was all kind of self-contained, like a miniseries. But the events in this, well, the whole season, really, I mean, and especially the finale, have, you know, ramifications for what happens to a lot of the characters.
Oh,
and where
character.
They go.
Yeah.
And where they go in season two. So, you know, despite the fact that this storyline may be finished to a point, it's gonna spawn a lot of new interesting stories. So,
yeah. The season finales that I have enjoyed the most, you know, probably the last decade, are the ones from Lost, but they were also the most frustrating ones because you had no idea where they were going, and then all of a sudden something would happen, and, you know, that would just completely change what was happening. And, you know, and then you were like, well, what does that mean? Where did that come from? So at least I don't have to do that. At least I feel satisfied with what we've done. But let's see, is there any news before we get in to start going through all the different discussion topics? We've got a lot of different elements to talk about.
Well, real quick, you know, a lot of the news for this week has just been kind of leading up to the finale, promoting the finale, and kind of showing the ending coming up. I know Stephen Amell was posting quite a few very exciting little videos and posts from himself about, you know, watching the finale. And I mean, you could tell he was really excited about it. So that was kind of cool. But just one real quick thing that I noticed today, I saw from the examiner.com that production for season two is starting on July 10th.
Oh, great.
So, you know, that's just a couple short months away. It's not going to be too long before they kind of get going on it again. So
that means probably by end of July, beginning of August, we'll start hearing about what the titles for the first few episodes are and getting some synopses and stuff like that.
Yeah, that'll be good. We can look at the titles and kind of make some preliminary notes as to what they're about.
Yeah, and Fear Not, True Believer, even though we've been coming to you weekly, or at least every week when there was an Arrow episode, we are not going away completely for the summer. Our plan is to stay with you at least monthly through the hiatus here, and we've got a couple interesting things planned that will hopefully keep you entertained and you know, give you more information about the Arrow show and Green Arrow. So we will again be monthly until the season comes back, and then we'll be right back here for the season premiere come August or September of 2013.
Yeah, and if you know, if they replay any of the season one, make sure you check out some of our older shows too. So it sounds like, you know, the Blu-rays and DVDs for season one aren't coming out until early September, probably around there. But you know, they may be replaying them, and you can always check out some of the episodes on the CW website and on their CW app. You can watch it right on your phone or your iPad, or probably some other devices too, but I know for sure those two.
Now, I haven't looked at the app. The website was missing a few episodes. It went something like 115, 116, 120, 121, 122. So
they don't
five episodes. It just wasn't continual.
Yeah, in my experience, you know, watching seasons on websites and stuff, they don't typically have all of the episodes on there. They just kind of put them up in chunks. That is kind of unusual that they're not sequential. But
yeah, it seems weird that they were missing whatever, like three of them there, I guess. But
yeah, anyway. So but look around, and even if you go check those out, take a listen to our discussions, because I want to go back and listen to them this summer and see where we were right and wrong and completely missed the mark, like Oliver at the beginning of the island.
Exactly. Yeah, that's cool. So. All right. Well, Josh, why don't we dive into the discussion topics for tonight's show, which, again, we are back to naming shows after the theme of the show. Forget that Darkness on the Edge of Town and whatever the hell that meant. Now we've got Sacrifice. So I think there were things
that's,
that were...
That's not subtle enough for you, Sacrifice?
Right. I think there were some things that were being sacrificed in this episode and not quality. Definitely not quality.
Not quality. Things were sacrificed. Did they mention that in the show? Word sacrifice.
You were counting how many times?
I did count. You know, I tried to count, and I kind of got distracted by, you know, the dialogue every once in a while, but no less than 6 times.
Wow.
Did the character say sacrifice? Felicity said it. Merlin said it. Oliver said it twice. Fire said it. Lance said it. So that they all kind of spread it around, but so there were a lot of sacrifices to discuss. So you know, I want to talk about first the obvious one, the big one, the main character one, Oliver. And obviously he's been making lots of sacrifices all season, but in this, I think it was kind of the spotlight of him to some other characters in the show. So, you know, he was sacrificing a lot of his safety and just in mm-hmm. stopping the undertaking. I don't think it appeared to me, you know, as he was leaving to go talk to Diggle and Felicity and to go capture Merlin, I don't think he believed he was going to survive.
Oh, no. He absolutely did not. I mean, he was set to go mano a mano with Merlin and, you know, Dig, you know, stood up for both of them, you know, and basically said, and I can't let you go. I can't let a brother go into battle alone. You know, we're doing it together or not at all. So, but you know, yeah, he was prepared because he had said, you know, he's bested me twice. I don't know how I'm going to beat him. And he was ready to just go in and, you know, again, sacrifice himself to save, or to, you know, to stop Merlin in whatever way he needed to.
So do you think that he really, that was meant to be a distraction to keep Merlin away from the device? Do you think he was trying to get the you know, the transmitter that I guess we never really actually saw any transmitter?
Yeah, so there were supposedly 2 ways to set off the device. It was either timed or Merlin had a transmitter, and Oliver said, you know, tell me where the transmitter is, and you know, it's somewhere close by where I know where it is. But yeah, they never went forward with that part of it. It was just a countdown. So I think Oliver felt that he needed to take Merlin down, Malcolm down to, you know, to stop this because they didn't know if he had, you know, like a dead man switch or something like that.
Gotcha.
And
so he really was going out for the kill, not so much just a distraction. So
I think so. I mean, I think it probably is a distraction as well because, you know, if you keep the guy occupied, if he's supposed to be setting off a button, you know, if you keep him occupied enough, you know, he's not going to be able to do his thing. Obviously, you know, he's got redundancy. He's got, you know, timers and everything like this. So, you know, It's all very well thought out and very smart villain. I mean, other than the monologuing. Oh, you caught me monologuing again.
We'll get to that. Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, you know, he pretty much had all his bases covered here. It was... I enjoy the smart writing. I know we talked, I think it was last week, about some of the weird plot holes, and there were a few things like that going on in this episode. But, I think, you know, Oliver really, you know, I mean, he was, like you said, he was really willing to put himself on the line for, you know, his family and for the city, because there's that whole discussion about that Lance had with the vigilante on the phone and stuff like that, and with Felicity about the vigilante, you know, that,
yeah.
And that he puts himself on the line for the city, that's really what he's up to and what he's doing. And Oliver, you know, really puts that forward.
And I think probably, at least this is why, you know, one of the reasons I would spotlight that so much to other characters, it puts his killing in perspective. And I think really that this,
it puts Merlin's killing in perspective?
No, Oliver's.
Oh, okay.
Oliver's killing in perspective
oh.
to spotlight that he has sacrificed so much. And
yes.
I think this episode was where he kind of truly became a hero, you know, just because I think it put that all into perspective. And I think he turned the road towards that quite a while back, mm-hmm. but now he really kind of is a hero. So, although, you know, I guess it's debatable how much he succeeded in this, but he did stop part of it. So,
right. Well, and also, I mean, many characters became heroes, and I think that is something that I really, really enjoyed about this episode is, it wasn't just about Oliver stopping the undertaking. It was the journey of many characters through this, you know, through trying to stop the undertaking or dealing with their personal issues with the threat of, you know, the fact that the city knows that this that, you know, this device is going to go off later, you know, that day, and, you know, can everybody get to safety in time? So, and we'll cover some of these other characters here coming up.
And I don't want to minimize that idea because I thought that was really good, but I have kind of felt and I feel in this one more than anything I've seen in the last year that I think that's kind of that that Avengers kind of idea of storytelling, you know, where there, you know, everybody's kind of working together. And to be a hero, it's not just the one hero coming to save everybody. So, and again, I'm not trying to minimize the writer's efforts on this because it was great, and I'm not comparing it to the Avengers. It was very much different and very entertaining. But that just it kind of reminded me of that kind of team effort.
Well, so, and it also, I mean, it relates back to the themes of family that we've seen all season. You know, for and Oliver is really taking a lead role here, you know, kind of as a patriarch of, you know, Team Arrow and everything like that. It's just it's good ensemble writing for the most part. There is always some character that suffers in an ensemble show depending on what week it is. I think Laurel might have been the one that got sacrificed this week for good writing. Might have been Thea last week, just in terms of, you know, the amount of time that you have to, you know, to give to a character to you know, to tell their story or to, you know, have their
Laurel,
scenes and stuff like that.
Laurel didn't really serve quite as much of a purpose in this one other than just being a part of the overall ensemble, but, and getting Tommy killed, but, you know, and you said family, you know, that's to me, I felt like that was one of the things that he was willing to sacrifice is just kind of he knew that this was going to change the family when he confronted his mother is going to change the family. He knew that he may not come back to his family. You know, I mean, so that was I felt like to him that was something he was sacrificing, just his place in the family, you know, and we'll kind of see where that goes from there, because obviously his family dynamic is turned upside down again, you know. I mean, from
really
what happens
fractured.
From here with Moira. So, and he confronted Moira and told her the truth, and he, you know, kind of sacrificed some of his secrets that he'd been keeping for, I think for the good of her emotional state and the good of the family. You know, sometimes all of the truth out there to a family isn't good for a family, you know. But I think it was time that she understood, because she needed to help him do something to stop this.
That was a great scene, just because, I mean, he was able to, he laid it on the line. She did not want to hear this. I mean, she obviously in her heart knew exactly what happened, and that's what was, you know, kind of powering her to keep moving forward with, you know, okay, I know bad stuff's happened. Frank Chen's died, but we got to just keep moving ahead with the undertaking. You know, my family's in danger. And Oliver telling her the fact that, Malcolm did not actually kill Robert. Robert took his own life. Robert sacrificed his own life for the safety of his son, and, you know, was allowed him to be able to return back to the family, you know, to quote right as wrongs and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, that like snapped her out of the lane she was in. Like, she had blinders on and was just kind of moving forward because she had to believe that Malcolm had murdered Robert in order to keep herself moving forward to do what she had to do to stop him, or, you know, whatever else, what other agenda items she may have.
Well, and I think it felt like it had almost become a habit to just, got to protect the family. Doesn't matter what I do. I just have to do that, you know? And just, I think she finally realized, wait, this is wrong. And you could see a glimpse of her being like that before this all happened. When she first found out about the undertaking in that flashback with Robert, she told him, She told him that this was not right, that he couldn't do it, to try to stop it.
Right.
You know? And so you could see that, you know, she's a smart lady. She knows what's right and wrong. And it finally occurred to her, you know what, wait a second. What I'm doing is exactly the opposite of what I should be doing. So,
yeah.
And you're right. That scene, I think, showed her that.
Well, and like you said, she's got this really kind of single-mindedness about it that, got to protect my family, got to protect Oliver, got to protect Thea. Well, except for in the season premiere where she had Oliver kidnapped in order to scare him away from or make sure that there was nothing that he knew about, you know, whatever else was going on. So, but, you know, she changes her mind then. Basically, as soon as Oliver confronts her and tells her, you know, this is the truth. This is what happened. This is how it all went down. It allows her to kind of snap out of that and realize that, you know, she honors the memory of her dead husband and she honors the memory of her kids or the, you know, honors her kids, not the memory of her kids, but just her kids by, you know, trying to save the thousands of lives that are in the Glades. I mean, we don't know how many people are there, but, you know, they talk about thousands of people. I mean, it's probably, I think they did mention the number of city blocks. It's probably like, I think it was like 16 square blocks or something like that.
It was a pretty big area. It was bigger than I had envisioned when, you know,
when they show
the whole season as they talked about it and as they show it and stuff.
Yeah.
I kind of just pictured this little, you know, just a couple square block area that was kind of like the slums, you know, and just a really rundown part of town. But it was much bigger than that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're basing it on a big city like Philadelphia or Baltimore or something like that, I mean, yeah, it could be quite a few blocks on either side. I mean, that would encompass a lot of people.
And also think about the map of the subway, because that's that little circle map on the thing. And I'm kind of guessing here, but that seems like that was all underneath the Glades. So that's kind of like a map of the area.
Oh, do you
like
think the circle kind of represented the space of the Glades, and then
that's what it kind of seemed like to me.
Oh, that's So, I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right because of the way the subways intersect and all that.
Yeah, and the subway's going to go. I mean, it's going to go past that. Obviously,
sure.
It's not going to stop at the edge of the circle there. So that's kind of how I was envisioning that circle there.
That's
like
cool.
That was the Glades, but
yeah.
So you know, one more sacrifice Oliver made in this episode was, you know, he again was making a sacrifice of his life and his safety on the island in the flashback just to stop the missile.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a whole lot of flashbacks in this episode, which was good. I'm glad they didn't have too many, but it was kind of like a little mini undertaking, you know. Fires was trying to shoot down this plane, and before Yao Fei died, he gave Oliver the apparently the absolute most dull knife that he could possibly give him.
Yes,
because it took him forever to cut through those.
Well, it was just
steel cables or whatever.
It was a really strong leather thong that he was bound up with. I think that's what it was, because it was sharp enough that when he did one swipe at Shadow, I mean, granted, his hands are behind his back and he's having to saw. You know, I mean, he doesn't have very much movement, and when he goes to slice Shadows, you know, just like one swipe and she. Breaks out.
He was using the wrong side. He didn't realize because he couldn't see it. You know,
probably. It took him a whole week to saw through that. So.
Yeah, they said that was about the same amount of time, right?
Yeah, so exactly, right.
The writers are using that amount of time in between, so it took him a week. But anyway, so that was kind of a little mini sacrifice on the island there. But and then, you know, we talked about how Moira, you know, first she was willing to sacrifice the thousands of lives in the Glades just to save her family. But then, of course, you know, she decided to go against that. And her big sacrifice was letting the press know. She invited all the press over to her house. I guess so she didn't have to go to them. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably a good way to do it when you're rich and well known, and you know,
that's the way 1%ers do it. Mm-hmm. The press comes over to your house.
The 1% way of confessing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the press isn't coming over here, I'll tell you that. But she, you know, she sacrificed her freedom and she sacrificed her family. I mean, not her family's lives from Merlin, but she sacrificed having that, freedom to be with her family, and also the relationships with her family are going to be changed forever, obviously, too,
right,
by confessing all this stuff.
Well,
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I thought it was a really responsible thing for her to do because, I mean, she's as complicit in a number of these killings as Malcolm is, and I think we're going to see the fallout from that in season two. I mean, obviously, that this family dynamic now, you know, Moira's going to be in jail, and, you know, what... You know, what's going to happen at home? Obviously, you know, you've got Thea. Oliver can take care of himself. I mean, Thea can pretty much take care of herself. But Thea and Moira had finally sort of reconnected after being, you know, really separated prior to the season just due to the fact that Oliver was never around and Moira never really paid attention to her daughter. And now, you know, you finally go, oh, I've, you know, the whole family's kind of back together and now I'm going to confess and just... You know, it's great. I'm glad she did it. I think it was a strong step for the character because it was the right thing to do. And that, you know, the Queen family seems to, they may have their mistakes throughout, you know, their journeys, but they can make the right decisions when the time comes. And I think, you know, Oliver obviously takes after his mom in a number of aspects here. It's not just his dad. So yeah. That was cool.
Well, and it also it really kind of solidifies Oliver's character and why he would be the kind of person that could become a hero. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get strong from having bad experiences like you might have had on the island, but you could also become very, you know, cold and dark. He didn't have to come back and be a hero. He could have been the villain. You know, he could be the bad guy after all those experiences. But you can see from his family, which, you know, they've said multiple times that this is a very family-centered show. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's the stories are about the Queen family, and so you can see where he would become a hero pretty easily.
Yeah.
So,
very cool.
Well, some more sacrifices here on the list here, you know, Felicity and Diggle, they're sacrificing their safety and possibly their lives. Diggle obviously is going to take a chance and go with Oliver to get Merlin. And, that's a huge risk because he knows what he's capable of. I mean, Diggle has seen him take out an entire, wasn't the FBI who does his friend work for?
Argus.
Yeah. So I mean, he saw him take out these trained professionals. Yeah. You know that. I guess that wasn't him. That was Deadshot. But he knows what Merlin's capable of, though.
Oh right, yeah, definitely.
And he's beaten Oliver, so so he's got to be good. And Felicity stays in the Glades to help them with the computers, you know, and I
was going to say, I think it's more Diggle sacrificing Felicity because Oliver's like, okay, Diggle, you're going to go deactivate the device and I'm going to go take out Merlin. And he's like, no, I need to come with you. So we need someone else to go deactivate the device. Not it. Oh, hey, Felicity, it's computer, right? You can deal with that. And she's like, oh, sure, okay. But, yeah, like you say, then she, you know, she says to Oliver, it's like, you know.
Well, they could have traded. I'm not sure Felicity would have gone and been as helpful with Oliver, but.
that would have been amusing. But, yes, it would have turned out much differently, I think.
She might have been able to distract Merlin with just the way she talks. He'd have been like, wait, what did you just say? What? And, you know, then he could have shot him right there.
Yeah, exactly. It could all have been over just like that, so.
Yeah.
But that was great. I thought, you know, it showed real cojones for her. You know, someone, you know, she's been threatened by the police already in the episode and very nervous about that. And, you know,
that was a good scene. I really like that scene.
Yeah, where he asks her, you know, what do you call hacking? And she's like, a hobby, which, of course, I don't do and stuff like that. But, you know, for this character, you know, she's standing up for Oliver in the episode in many different ways. You know, first to Detective Lance to say, you know, the vigilante, I used to think he was a, you know, a bad guy, but he really cares about the city. And then, you know, she sees, you know, I mean, it's kind of one of those things, what are you going to do? It's like, my two friends here are going to go potentially sacrifice themselves to save the city. And it's like, I left roast in the oven. I got to get home. No, I mean, she's going to stay there and she's like, I'm going to do whatever I can. And, you know, you got to remember this is under verdant in the middle of the Glades. So if something goes off, I mean, like Oliver said, they were at ground zero. So yeah.
She literally didn't move. She stayed at her computer in her chair as it was happening. You know, she was
probably the safest place to be. So with all the stuff falling around,
so that was a dramatic scene through that whole. I mean, obviously, but anyway,
yeah.
It was emotional. I thought she was really showing how extremely scared she was, but yet determined to stay at her post.
Grace under fire too, as she's telling Detective Lance what has to happen, and then it doesn't quite go right. The timer changes, and so she's like, you know what? Hang on a second. I'm going to find out what to do. And she goes away for a few seconds, comes back, and it's like, all right, here's what we got to do. Just listen carefully. I mean, she knows her stuff. I mean, she was very confident about her skill set in being able to. I mean, I don't know if you've ever had to troubleshoot anybody on a computer over the phone or anything like that, but when you can't see what someone else is doing, it's a pain in the butt. So you got to make sure they're really paying attention, and you have to explain it just so. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, it was good. So, and speaking of Detective Lance there, he made several huge sacrifices in this one. And for someone who is, I don't want to say just a police detective, but, he's not this trained vigilante guy, and he's definitely a capable police officer, but he made some big sacrifices here. First he revealed to the captain that he knew that he had been working with, the vigilante on several cases, and he needed, definitely needed help now.
And he was helpful too. And that the vigilante was helpful.
Yeah. So, and the captain did not like that at all. Nope. So, and he didn't believe him either. He didn't believe that there was anything happening. But, he was sacrificing potentially his career, and he got suspended, and they threatened to arrest him if he didn't stop. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge sacrifice, and he knew that was coming if that was a possibility.
Yeah.
So,
I got to say, Paul Blackthorne. In this episode, I've enjoyed the character to date, but he's kind of vacillated for me between being a cool enough character to being a real jerk, and especially back when the mom came back and they were dealing with whether or not Sarah was still alive or not. There were some missed moments, I thought, some emotional beats that he could have had with Laurel that he just missed. And this episode, the writers hit all of the beats, and I thought Paul Blackthorne just nailed it. He just did a phenomenal job in his role as the detective in this one.
Yeah, I agree completely. It'll be interesting to see where they take him from here, because I'm fairly sure he would be reinstated, I guess, mm-hmm. or unsuspended or whatever. But what's his relationship with, the vigilante going to be now?
I see. This is the point. This is like that turning point where it's like, do you still pretend to have a task force hunting him if your lieutenant thinks that you're working with him? Or does, maybe he ends up being promoted and he takes over and becomes the lieutenant or the captain or whatever in charge. And then he kind of keeps the phone and, sort of like a Batman thing. He passes off information to Oliver, and Oliver passes information back to him, and they go through some sort of level up on their relationship, where they're working together but they're not really working together, but they are mutual, they mutually look out for each other, and in turn the city. Because I think one of the most important aspects of Lance's character in this episode, it's not that he is out to get the vigilante. He is not a character that is so focused on doing just one thing. I got to bring down the vigilante, because that's what everybody else seems to be. It's like, you said you'd take him down, and he says, no, I said I would uphold the law, because the law is firm and the law is steady, and I am doing that. And, he is like, I hate to sound like, all the relationship stuff with Batman again, but he is that kind of the one good cop, and not necessarily in a sea of bad cops, but in just cops that are, may not necessarily care about, doing the right thing all the time. They're just doing a job, and he has, a calling or a mission for the law. And I think that speech is going to be key to where his character goes in the next season and in future seasons.
Yeah, well, and one thing that I really like about that aspect of the character with his determination to be I don't know what you'd say, noble, just to uphold the law, and that's like his one true philosophy, in his life, is it because of what the vigilante is doing, you know, and that he's trying to do good, but yet he's breaking the law. There's a lot of conflict there, mm-hmm. and you don't see that very often in you know, like even in Batman. I mean, it's at least, you know, I don't feel that same kind of conflict in Commissioner Gordon as I would in Detective Lance, because they just work together as a team pretty much in this. But this, I just felt that conflict. So I like that character aspect of him.
Yeah. And the best scene, I think, that happened here was when he's trying to disable the device. Felicity's helping him, and, you know, he should cut the blue wire with the white stripes, not the white wire with the blue stripes. And he cuts, you know, whatever wire she tells him to cut, and the countdown jumps forward like 5 minutes. And he's like, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. And he's, like, panicking. And then he just kind of gets this serene calm about him and calls up Laurel, who, by the way, Oliver told her, stay out of the Glades. Her dad left her a message, stay out of the Glades. Oh, Dad, I'm not even at the office. It's like, BS, man. I know exactly where you are right now. Get out of the Glades. You know, does this woman not... I mean, again, we go back to, like, you know, this kind of helpless character, and we've seen her kick butt before, and then she's doing stupid stuff like this, so...
I know. I was a little disappointed in that, but...
Yeah, but, you know, he just... He opens his whole heart to her. He's like, he knows he's going to die. And what's great, and the character growth for Lance in this particular episode, is the fact that he makes his full arc. He goes from, you know, a guy upholding the law to you know, to doing kind of a vigilante act on his own, because, you know, he's not being supported by the police. Like, if they caught him doing something, you know, he probably would get fired or brought up on some kind of charges. Even though he's trying to help people out, you know, he's basically going against the orders of his captain for not... you know, for not just being suspended, you know, whatever that means. And he, you know, has this whole moment where he unburdens everything and he apologizes to Laurel. And here's the beat that was missing from previous episodes. He actually says he loves her. And I don't believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, and if anybody else knows, they can write in, but I don't recall him saying that to her before. He's apologized for being a jerk and an abrasive father, but he's never come full circle to saying that he loves her, you know, because it seemed like the whole thing with the sister going or dying and, you know, kind of pushing the rest of his family away, you know, it's taken him a while to get back to that. And I got a little piece of dirt in my eye, I think.
I was cutting onions during that scene. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was good. And that, you know, that was another big sacrifice for him is he thought he was going to die. I actually thought he was going to die.
I was like, I don't remember Paul Blackthorne. Is he coming back for season two? I don't remember.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. So that was good. And they really built some good dramatic tension there. So,
yeah.
Well, and then, you know, the other really big sacrifice I really want to touch on here, was Tommy. Tommy had a rough episode.
Tommy, can you hear me?
oh, the poor guy. You know, first he shows up to confront Oliver and tells him what a big, fat, lying, cheating jerk he is.
Don't take a drunken swing at Oliver either. Just that was...
Yeah, don't even take a sober swing. You're drunk, man. You're out of luck. I mean, you know, first... geez, that's great. He goes, hey, I went over to talk to Laurel just like he told me. Thank you so much. Oh, yeah, you were kissing her. you know, so then he goes and he's like, hey, Dad, hey, guess what Oliver told me? Yeah, you're what?
Yeah.
Really? And, you know, he finds out his dad is really a psychopath. That's good. And then his dad, you know, slices his face up a little bit there.
Yeah. Oh, my God, he did him. Oh, he was so angry.
Oh, that. That scene where he was talking to Tommy and explaining what he was doing in such a calm, you know, just sort of he plays the message from his wife, and Tommy's freaking out. He's like, whoa, what are you doing? What are you doing? You know?
Yeah. Please don't play that.
Yeah. And so, you know, Tommy hears it and then asks if what he's going to do. And when he just burst out like that, you know, well, I can't remember what he said, like they deserve it or something like that. It was like scary, you know. I mean, he was just perfect.
He's got that calm menace, but then all of a sudden he just kind of erupts there. And especially when he watches TV and Moira, you know, reveals his name, and he just, oh, he loses it and slams his fist into the table, and man, I'm going to miss him.
Yeah. Yeah. I miss a few people here. So,
yeah.
Well, he rushed over, despite all that, he rushed over to save Laurel. He obviously knew she was there too. So, you know what? They all ought to try some reverse psychology on Laurel, because she does not do anything anybody tells her. So, Nutta said, hey, make sure you go to CNRI, because there's going to be this big earthquake. So, you want to make sure you're right there.
Right in the middle of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she wouldn't have gone, see? But so he went over, picked up a giant concrete slab off of her, which I think got some little Hulk action going on there. But, and she. Rushes right out, but he gets caught, and unfortunately,
rebarred.
Rebarred. He got rebarred. He got barred earlier in the show,
and then he got rebarred
at the bar, and then he got rebarred at the end. So, so man, that was the ultimate sacrifice. But you know, I guess maybe the biggest one for the good guys, anyway. So
yeah, and well, and the again. Colin Donald did a great job in his portrayal here of Tommy, because he went through all sorts of different things. He's mad at Oliver, and then he comes over to talk to his dad. You know, it's like he seems to be have been finding the more he hates Oliver, the closer he's getting to his dad. And so he's like, yeah, Dad, you know, after your jihad, let's get some steaks. And, you know, Merlin reveals that, no, yeah, I'm really going to destroy them because they deserve it. And that throws Tommy for another loop, and again, that's the kind of the honesty, the truth that like Oliver gave to Moira, and that kind of snaps Tommy out of the space, the headspace that he's in. So he realizes that, you know, wait a second, I'm coming at this all wrong, because Oliver's been right this entire time. He's my best friend. I've been pushing him away, and it's only in that, you know, those last few moments where, you know, Tommy realizes he's dying, and you know, He's apologizing to Oliver, not that he has anything to, you know, really apologize for. He says he's like his dad. Oliver, you know, won't hear that because he's nothing like his dad. And this proves it. I mean, he came to the Glades, to the place where, you know, Ground Zero, to save the woman that he loves, and, you know, ends up sacrificing his own life for that. Now, I got to ask you this question now. So back at Merlin's office, Tommy tells Oliver, please don't kill my dad. And Oliver just kind of looks at him and says, I got to get going. He doesn't make a statement one way or the other about it. And then at the end, Tommy is laying there, you know, on his deathbed. And he says, the last thing he says is, did you kill my dad? And Oliver takes a beat and says, no. And I think this has confused a lot of people, because a lot of people online are saying they didn't realize that Merlin was actually dead. I'm believing that you understood that Merlin was dead, correct?
It seemed like Merlin was dead to me. Yeah, I believed it. I mean,
okay. I believe that when Oliver stabbed himself with, you know, stabbed through him to, you know, stab Merlin, I mean, the arrow came through the guy's chest, around his where his heart is, and out the back of his out through his back. So I'm pretty sure that he's dead, just given the kind of the death rattle he gave there on top of the roof. So when Oliver says to Tommy that, you know, no, I didn't kill your dad, he, I mean, that's probably the most convincing lie that Oliver's done all season. And why do you think he said that at that point?
I think he said it to make Tommy feel better in his, you know, his last moments.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know.
Kind of a final act of friendship? Friendship?
Yeah. Yeah. Just know everything's going to be okay. Yeah. I had a couple thoughts after that. I'm like, well, let's see. Did he really kill him? Maybe they're leaving that open.
Yeah.
It is possible that he could survive, but it didn't feel like it to me. It felt like he was dead. And really, I was okay with him being dead. I was more upset with him killing Tommy, actually. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. This character's got a lot of potential.
You know, out of everything that was happening, I was kind of surprised that Fires got killed in the flashback. I'm assuming he's dead. Of course, I made these assumptions, you know, months ago, and I turned out to be wrong, so I don't know, but... I'm assuming Fires is dead, taking an arrow through the throat, right? But he could survive that.
he could survive, and just his singing career would be over.
He will no longer practice opera. and you know, I think we kind of figured that Malcolm would be killed in some fashion. Now, I had an entirely different take for it. So the sacrifice of Tommy and the fact that he died, huge surprise to me. It really caught me off guard. And, you know, I had really enjoyed the character, and then he started to push away from Oliver. And, you know, both of us, I think, were like, well, he's really starting to move towards that space, you know, that he will be, you know, a villain kind of character for the show. But now he's gone. So, wow, that, you know, kind of changes the entire dynamic that we've got going here. But it does, of course, open up the whole, you know, Oliver and Laurel, the triangle there. It really cements the relationship for Oliver and Laurel, I think, in the coming season.
Yeah, it's got to. I mean, now they've got each other, you know. That's pretty much it. So, but interesting to see. I was sad. I was sad he was gone. Yeah. I like Tommy.
Yeah, good job. I don't know if you saw the picture, Colin Donnell, on the night of the finale. He tweeted an Instagram, or I guess he Instagrammed. He didn't tweet it. He Instagrammed a photo of some cupcakes his girlfriend made for him. And they were these cupcakes with like a black piece of licorice coming out. It looks all kind of bloody, like a piece of rebar coming up out of the cupcake. It's very cool.
And it said R.I.P. on the cupcakes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I like the little that little red sprinkles on the frosting of the cupcake too, because it was dripping.
Pretty morbid. So,
that was good. I like that. Clever. Oh,
so and then but, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I that was. Like I said, just sad that Tommy's gone. It was a great scene, though, with Oliver. Stephen Amell, I thought, was, like, super emotional when Tommy was dying. And I think he feels like he really failed with Tommy dying. I mean, like, I know, you know, he failed with only getting one of the devices, but you know, you could look at that as going, look, I did everything I could, and at least I saved half of the area, you know, half of the city. And but then as soon as Tommy died, I think he really felt like he had failed.
Yeah, and that may be an element that drives the character, or that ends up becoming a sore point for the character in the future. That's obviously, you know, this was his, you know, his best friend that he was trying to make amends with. So we'll have to see where that comes, you know, comes in the next season.
Yeah.
And then we've got Roy, who was perfectly happy to almost sacrifice his life on a couple different occasions. I mean, boy, this character went from being kind of a snot, you know, a very competent snot, but you know, he's really doing his own hero thing in this episode as well, at least twice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one time we saw was really big. And then another time they didn't really show what he did with the bus.
Yeah.
But you know, it implied that he was going to do something big there. So and he you know, he's taken this obsession with the vigilante to a new level, where I mean, he's just going out and doing whatever he can. He's good at it in some ways. You know, he takes out two of the three guys. Damn. And then the third guy, you know, pulls the gun on him, and he seems like ultra surprised. He's like, oh, what do I do now?
Yeah, exactly. He had no way to counteract that. So,
yeah, luckily he had some help with
Speedy to the rescue.
A different Speedy, I guess. Yeah. And I like her little comment after she threw the bottle at the guy that had the gun.
Uh-huh.
You know, that she, you know, she had some wicked aim.
Yeah.
She's good.
I think that, yeah, there's something in that family that, you know, they've got, you know, preternatural aim or something like that. Cause, kind of came out of nowhere. It's like, oh, you know, oh no, what's going to happen? It was a throwback to the beginning of the episode where Oliver's confronted with the final bad guy who's about to shoot him. And all of a sudden the guy gets shot in the back from Diggle. You know, it was the same kind of setup as they had there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
well,
a lot of sacrifices.
A lot of sacrifices. And at first, I got to tell you, I thought they were going to – well, not at first, but toward the end of the episode, I thought that they were going to end up actually sacrificing a whole bunch of the people that knew Oliver's secret. You know, I thought – I didn't think Lance was going to make it. You know, neither of the Merlins made it. So, I mean, I'm thinking, well, geez, how many other people are going to die that know his secret? So,
yeah.
But you know, it ended up not being too many. There's still quite a few people that know, but
yeah. Well, and I think there was one scene with Oliver and Laurel, and I think it's setting up the reasoning for Oliver to explain this. You know, explain to her. That actually, and now that I'm thinking back, that was a pretty good scene too, because she says, you know, I see when you came back from the island that you've really changed, and he's like, I haven't changed. It basically the island stripped away everything that wasn't what I am now. So basically he was encumbered by all these other things, very Buddhist philosophy that he had all this encumbrance and he shed it away until he was, you know, basically whittled down. You know, the life has worn away everything that's not the rock underneath. So, you know, that was a nice sequence as well. And it's really setting him up. Cause he really, really, really wants to tell her that he's the vigilante. And I think he will have the opportunity to, I'm going to say before the mid season break, next year, that's going to be my prediction. Yeah.
I would guess at the mid season break, that'll be like the mid season finale, I bet.
Okay.
That's a pretty good guess. I don't know. That's doesn't seem like that too far of a stretch. But
yeah, well, you know, I got to go for the easy low hanging fruit.
Oh
here,
yeah.
So
no, I agree with you. I agree with you. So, but you know, and I had a question like so at the end of the episode, you know, like I said, they saved half of the city. They stopped one of the devices, which is good.
Yeah, just the east half of the Glades got destroyed.
Right, and boy, did it ever! But what was left? What's left for him to do at the end of this? It was a season finale, but it was almost like, well, it ended. It didn't end perfectly good or perfectly bad, but
right.
It also didn't feel like there was much of a cliffhanger.
Right, exactly. So, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Although, you know, I'm anxious to see what happens next, but that certainly does open it up to letting the story pick up 2 or 3 months later right. on after all this has occurred. So,
right. Well, like I was saying at the beginning of our show, you know, it all kind of packaged itself up because the season starts with Oliver returning from being on the island for 5 years and dealing with just, you know, having to come back to society after having been away and having this mission, which started out as the diary. I've got to continue to cross off the names in this diary to honor my father. And then as he slowly learns more and more about what's going on, he realizes, well, it's not just that, you know what? Okay. Oh, there's other bad stuff happening. I'm going to go stop that. So it's not in the book. I need to help my friend. My friend has a bad guy that he needs to kill. So I'm going to help him with Diggle and Deadshot. You know, then, oh, there's this undertaking. And then he finally realizes it's not just the people's names in this book. I have to take out, you know, like the head of the serpent here. And so he's done that. So now potentially there's still people in the diary that he can continue to go after. But I feel like the whole Malcolm Merlyn undertaking the names in the diary, that's all done. Like there isn't anything else to do there. So what's next for him? It's for Oliver to understand that, as you said, he has really become heroic in this episode, and it's for him to take that, to take those lessons that he's learned now in this first season and, you know, move up to another level. And, you know, does he look outside of the city? Does he start looking at the bigger evils in the world around him and realize, you know, hey, I've got to start taking care of, you know, this or that, and trying to look at what the bigger picture is instead of attacking all the little incidents, you know, not just going after muggers and stuff like Roy's doing, but, you know, look up the chain and see who really are the people that are the Malcolm Merlins of the world, and going after those people. That may, you know, I think that's a really great place that they can move this character and, you know, increase his heroism as well as increase, you know, the stakes and the action and everything like that.
Yeah, and he did mention in one of the last couple episodes that
Merlin was stopping the undertaking was his penance or was his way of righting his dad's wrong. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I agree with you. I hope they don't take too long to do it. I don't want the first 3-4 episodes of him trying to decide, oh, well, should I do this or should I not do it? Or, you know, I mean, I kind of want him to decide real quickly that he is still needed. So
decide through the break and then just do.
Yeah.
Just start going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I think something will have to happen. I mean, something will have to happen that you know, he believes only he can stop. Or maybe, you know, maybe Detective Lance will call him for help. You know, maybe he'll go the other way this time. So,
yeah.
But anyway, it was fantastic ending and very dramatic. And I mean, he's got to take some time to heal because apparently he's got a hole through his torso.
Yeah.
Which won't kill him, you know, it'll kill Fires and it'll kill, you know, Tommy Merlin and it'll kill Malcolm Merlin and,
right.
You know, pretty much anybody but Oliver and Deadshot, I guess.
Shot know, through the sticks. Heart and who's to blame, you know? So, yes, well, this episode had several callbacks to the pilot. One of them being him getting stabbed through the chest. So it wasn't the same side, it was the opposite side of his chest that he got shot, but at the end of the pilot was where we see him get shot, you know, where Yao Fei shoots him, you know, basically to save his life. But, you know, Oliver, I mean, he stabbed himself. I guess it seemed like his shoulder, but I guess it was a little bit further down. I was afraid he was going to get a lung, but he went, because of how Merlin was holding him, he went, you know, right into middle of Merlin's chest, you know, lung, heart area and stuff like that, and out his back.
Yeah. I had to watch that several times to even realize that's what he was doing. The first time I saw it, I thought he just reached around and got him. Which you know, in retrospect, is there any reason he couldn't have done that? But
yeah.
You know, that's okay. But I don't mind about that. I mean, that would be hard to aim anyway. But
right. But the arrow disappeared quickly. Like you know, there's an arrow through him, through Malcolm, and then they both fall to the ground and separate. And there's the arrow is nowhere. It's not through Malcolm. It's not through Oliver. So it's like, you know, those you can't just pull those back out. They're barbed for a reason. So I'm kind of unsure where it went.
Well, if I think, and again, I watched this several times, so I think this is right. But I think it actually went through the back of Merlin. I think you could see at some point when he was falling or something. But
oh, okay.
But it definitely got him. I mean, I could tell it got him. I just couldn't tell exactly at first that it went through Oliver. So
yeah.
That was kind of a cool scene to rewatch a few times. So and then he kind of as he you know was telling him, you know, I learned what I needed to do for my father, whatever. I love how he kind of stumbled there. I mean, you could tell he was just in so much pain, but he was determined to win, and he just had this kind of cool stumble fall Oliver did. I mean,
yeah.
That made it even more heroic to me because you could tell how beat up he was.
Yeah. Well, and so another flashback or another callback to the pilot is the opening of the episode is Oliver and Robert and the other unknown crewman on the raft where Robert kills the other crewman and then takes his life. You know, it sacrifices his own life and tells Oliver to survive. Just to remind us, you know, again, it's a nice little bookend to show us what else was happening in the episode. And then also, there was we were blessed with a number of training sequences in the first couple episodes. I was looking for this again. I don't think this was in the first episode. I think it was the second episode, Honor Thy Father. But he was doing a lot of rope climbing, and there have been different times where, you know, you see him hanging from the rafters or, you know, doing other kinds of pull-ups and, you know, strengthening exercises. And at the beginning of this episode, you know, you've got him chained up on these chains, and I was like, how's he going to get out of this? And he starts climbing up. I'm like, what's going to happen when he gets to the top? And then he decides halfway up just to drop and let his own weight, you know, pull the chains off of the and break the beam or the pipe or whatever was up above.
Yeah, I think he climbed up so he had enough momentum for his weight to break it.
Oh, painful.
Oh yeah, and plus they were wrapped around his wrist. So,
yeah.
And I think maybe he might have wrapped them around his arms or something first, so his wrist didn't take the
I was looking to see if he was grabbing him, because when he's climbing up, you know, he was holding onto the chain further up as he was climbing, and they were just wrapped around his wrist with his gloves and stuff. And I didn't see him like re-hold them when he fell, but yeah, you can assume that otherwise he probably would have just yanked his arms out of their sockets or something. That
yeah, or broken both his wrists, which would be bad for shooting arrows. But
yeah, definitely. So that was a great opening of the episode. This episode had some of the best stunt coordination. I mean, between that sequence was Stephen Amell. I mean, I don't know if he did the stunt with the drop, but the climbing and the the hoisting himself up and everything like that was all him.
I got to check out that workout regimen because I think I could work for a long time and still never look even close to that. But
yeah, you know, and then you know the splash water on him and stuff, so he's all drippy and glisteny.
I need a few scars and tattoos. That might help too.
Yeah. Got to rough it up.
Okay, we'll call it Arrow the Later Years. I think that would be good.
Go for that for Halloween. Well, I'd love to see that.
So, well, I hate to even bring this up, but I'm going to because they were noticeable enough to me. But I have just a few minor little complaints about this episode, just sprinkled here and there. No big deal, you know. They're the pieces of toast that I can pick off of the butter. It's not like it ruined it for me. I'm okay. All right, but. Just a few things I want to bring up. Number one, I already mentioned, I want to see Laurel's strength again. It seems like forever since she kicked that guy's butt back in the nightclub or wherever they were. I was like right at the beginning of the season. I don't know. I mean, she needs to be a stronger character than this. I don't just want her to be. She needs to be a stronger character. No more damsel in distress stuff.
Yeah.
This is the first time that I have felt this, but I almost felt like the flashbacks in this episode were just a little disconnected from the story this time. Just and not the way they transitioned or anything, because the transitions
were great. Yeah,
amazingly. Yeah, like from boot to boot. You know, I mean, but they didn't feel like they really belonged with this episode, and maybe just because the episode was so powerful and so dramatic for a season finale, maybe it just didn't matter. But I
disagree with that. I've had other flashbacks I think that didn't fit as well, but I thought these thematically, though we were dealing with like seven sacrifice stories, you know, in the present time and only kind of this one continuous story in the flashback, I thought they worked okay.
It was okay, yeah, I guess. I guess, you know, to me, I'm seeing the flashbacks as how he became who he is now.
Uh-huh.
And I guess it just didn't feel necessary in this. I'm not sure. You know what? They weren't so long that it ruined the episode for me or even distracted a little bit. It just – I was very aware when the flashbacks were – on and when they were over, and I don't know. It just
well,
it
here's
just felt
the thing,
a little...
because what we've seen, we don't normally see a lot of growth in Oliver's character in the present day. I mean, there's a little bit of more of an understanding that the character has for the people around him, but you're really in the flashbacks. You're really seeing him grow as the character, you know, to what he is now. And I think because there was so much other stuff going on with Oliver's character in the present day, it diminished the effect that we saw on that in the flashbacks. So maybe that's what you're responding to on that.
Yeah, it might be that. Either way, like I said, it didn't you know ruin it for me or anything. But we mentioned this way earlier too, is a little bit too much monologuing. It seemed. I don't know, you know, a little comic booky, I guess, but especially at the beginning when Merlin was talking to Oliver, kind of laying it all out almost, you know, but that was actually good. That was kind of a good introduction. I didn't mind that because you know, he knew him. I mean, and at the very end of the last episode, his line, you know, oh no. You know, when he realized it was Oliver, I actually didn't mind that. And it's not like he revealed all his secrets. Well, you'll never stop me because I have two earthquake devices. You know,
oh, wait, I'm not supposed to tell you that yet.
So, another thing, Diggle could have really saved Oliver a lot of pain.
Yeah.
If instead of talking to Merlin, he would have just shot him when he walked through the door.
Yep.
all you had to do was walk through and bam.
Oh, hey, what are you doing here?
Why did he talk? Are you ready to die?
I am here to kill you. Well, then kill me. Yes, I will kill you.
So, you know, that was a one little one right there. I'm like, just shoot him. Oh, he got away.
Yeah.
And then finally, my last, I guess this is monologuing. It feels kind of like something like that. But, you know, Thea and Roy are doing their super little superhero act downtown during the riots, saving people, saving the innocent people. And, oh, my gosh, there's a bus in trouble with a busload full of people screaming to get out.
Help me, help me.
On the window. Let's go get them. Wait. There's always time for a kiss.
I love you. I know.
And not only did they kiss, but they kissed right in front of all these people pounding on the window to try to get out. I would have stopped my pounding and been like, what are you doing? Stop.
Oh, look, isn't that sweet? Young love.
Oh, my gosh. So that one actually did bother me. I'm like, would you kiss her later? Kiss. Oh. So,
stupid kiss.
That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. They are. They're young. Yeah. But, and then the last thing that I want to kind of bring up here is, I don't know. In any other episode of this series, I may not have even noticed. But I noticed right this on the second time I watched this, I noticed in the left hand corner there, I think there was a little public service announcement from AT&T or Verizon or some cell phone company about not texting and driving, and their little new slogan, which is a very, very good and valuable slogan that everybody should listen to, is it can wait, right? Don't text and drive, be safe, right? But literally right after that, Roy and Thea are in this, I'm assuming a stolen truck or something that they're trying to go rescue people, and he is texting on his phone. She grabs it out of his hand and says, it can wait. I mean, it almost felt like the commercial wasn't over yet and I needed to keep fast forwarding because it was so obvious. I don't know. I don't mind little things like that being in the story, but well, that one just pulled me right out of it.
That was a little abrupt and like, whoa, hey, you're the one that was taking drugs and driving your car like way too fast on a slick road, you know, on your 18th birthday. So
I felt like the camera was going to zoom into Thea and sin. She was going to break the
fourth wall,
you know, and start talking to people and say, you know, when you're driving a car, you should not be, anyway, that was all that. That one actually bothered me more than all the other ones put together. Those were just minor complaints. Loved the episode.
Well, Josh, now you know. And knowing is half the battle.
So. Do, 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 do.
The more you know. All right, so let's just talk about some of the references to the comic books in this show. There just did not seem to be as many as there have been. I feel like we've got a few listed here, but stuff was going by so fast, like. I didn't catch half of these until I watched the episode again. So the main one that was in the previous episode is the Ferris Airlines plane that was trying to get shot down by Fires and his team in the flashback.
That's a reference to Ferris Bueller, right?
No. You're good try. No, reference to Carol Ferris and Ferris Air, which is where Hal Jordan is a test pilot, a.k.a. Green Lantern. So that's Green Lantern's a good buddy of Green Arrow because all those green guys have to stick together. We find out Moira's middle name during her press conference. Her middle name is also Dearden, which is Thea's middle name as well, which is a reference to Mia Dearden, a.k.a. Speedy 2, the female sidekick of Green Arrow and, like, I think it was Green Arrow Volume 3 or something like that. Oliver says he knows where the Markov device is. It is under Pap Street, which is named after George Pap, who he co-created Green Arrow with Mort Weisinger. And then when Detective Lance rushes down into the subway, he enters on Puckett Avenue. And that's a reference to Kelly Puckett, who is one of the co-creators of Connor Hawke. Connor Hawke is Oliver Queen's son in the comic books and the second Green Arrow when Oliver died at one point and then before he came back to life. And then finally, a buddy of mine at work pointed this out. He thought that the... the sequence with where Oliver is fighting the thugs in the warehouse with the chains wrapped around his hands was a reference to the God of War video game, where that character has these knives on these chains and like flicks them around and, you know, knocks people out and stuff. It does kind of a long range melee attack. So, not having ever played the game, I looked up a couple videos online and it sure looks like that's kind of, the stunt was kind of inspired by. So, so that's kind of cool.
Well, either way, it was a pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Great stunt. And, that's pretty much all the references. There's I saw on some other blog, somebody said they saw a Cord Industries sign in, the Glades, but I watched the Glade sections a couple different times here and I could not find that. So I didn't see that anywhere, but it's totally possible it was in the back on a building somewhere.
Hmm.
So,
either way,
any final thoughts about about this episode or about the season in general? Or,
well, I'm really glad that I started watching this show. I'm really glad that we started talking about it, and I have not been disappointed at all. It has just gone, it's just gotten better and better. The excitement level has gone up for me all season long, and they didn't disappoint me with the finale. I'm very, very pleased, and I'm going to spend the summer telling everybody I know to start watching this show and really to get into the season quite a bit, so they'll not want to stop.
Yeah.
So I'm very impressed with it, the writing and the talent that's behind it. So I look forward to really finding out more about not just what's going to happen next, but I'm really into looking behind the scenes and kind of checking things out about how it's made and why they did certain things. That's why I like those references and talking about it with you and stuff. So I'm looking forward to kind of checking out as much as I can over the summer to find out where it's going.
Yeah, I'm very excited to that it's coming back and that we had so much fun on this first season. I mean, it was a kind of a crapshoot at the beginning. It's like, well, you know, how's the show going to be? But I don't know. That first episode just really said to me, these guys, the creators behind the show, really know what they're doing and they are passionate about it. It's not just people that, oh, yeah, I remember reading something about Green Arrow when I was a kid, and let's go make this show about this guy who's an archer, but we're not going to call him Green Arrow. And that made me a little apprehensive. It's like, well, they already seem like they're distancing themselves from the character, but I think they are doing that so that they can grow the character in a way that, you know, feels organic to people that don't know anything about the character and is still very reverential to the reverent to the comic book fans that have read the comics and, you know, for 40, 50, 60 years or whatever.
And I feel that they're doing that for both sets of fans. I think they're doing a great job.
And, well, unfortunately, though, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got picked up, so I'm going to be doing a podcast on that next year instead of this. No, I'm just kidding. I'll be back. So, anyway.
We can enjoy both.
No, you can. You only like one show at a time, I thought.
Oh, no. You can like many shows. So,
wow.
And I can't wait to hear you discussing that.
I'm really looking forward to S.H.I.E.L.D.
It's going to be exciting. The TV's getting good again.
Definitely. There's plenty of stuff to watch out there now. So, well, anyway, that is all that we have for this season of Arrow and this season's worth of Green Justice. As I said before, please stay tuned. Over the summer, we've got a couple of surprises in store. We'd like to continue to talking about Green Arrow and maybe some of the comics. We might have a few interviews lined up as well. So just keep watching the feed and see what we bring out on a monthly basis.
Yeah, and if you enjoyed this episode and this podcast, please make sure you leave feedback for us on iTunes. We want to hear it. And please let us know what you think, too, at our email, greenjustice@randomchatter.com. And come over to our Facebook page. I post stuff there whenever we both are putting some good stuff when we hear about it. And I'm sure through the summer there'll be little tidbits here and there that that we'll want to share with everybody. So that's at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And of course, you need to make sure that you tell your friends about this show and tell your friends about this podcast, because we can't get more listeners without people enjoying the show. I mean, I'm sure people could listen to us and talk, you know, talk here for an hour, but it's not going to mean much unless they're watching Arrow on the CW. So please tell your friends about that. Don't sacrifice anything to us for, you know, we need people listening. But I don't know where I was going with that. I was trying to get sacrifice in there one more time, I guess. So, but remembering, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.